You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, now the work begins. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Boy, do I have some thoughts to share with you today. A variety of things that I think are really important points, that many of which are not being pointed out in the corporate media. First of all, the big, in my opinion, the biggest win last night, or at least the win that I was the most jubilant about, was Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren is, I have met Elizabeth Warren. I was at an event here in Washington, D.C., a small private event that she spoke at, and she is a remarkable, she's brilliant. She's friendly. She's personable. She's smart. I would vote for her for president, and it wouldn't surprise me if in 2016 she runs for president. Although she's going to make a damn good senator. But she is taking Ted Kennedy's seat, and she is the appropriate and rightful heir to that seat. And, you know, former male model and, what was he trying to hook up his daughters or something? He's a matchmaking service guy, Scott Brown. He's going to go back to taking nudie pictures for the calendars, I guess. So, anyhow, Elizabeth Warren and a whole variety of progressives actually were elected, and this is a big deal. I mean, this is, you know, frankly, an important big deal, a very important big deal. It's so, what do we do about this? There's this morning I was actually, let me just go through some of this. You know, we got rid of Ben Nelson and Joe Lieberman and replaced them with Democrats substantially to the left. In Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin knocked off Tommy Thompson. We saw voters in Colorado, Washington State approve ballot measures to legalize pot. This is the first time in the 100 years since pot was criminalized back around the turn of the 20th century, the early 20th century, that a state has voted to decriminalize it. Just say, yeah, you want to smoke pot? Fine. Not just medical marijuana. Massachusetts went for medical marijuana as well. Voters, a huge and historic. There have been 32, I believe, votes on whether or not, up till this point, on whether or not gays should be able to marry, whether we should have marriage equality in the United States. Last night, three states, Maine, Maryland, and Washington, voted to say yes to marriage equality. This is a sea change. What you're seeing now is the emergence. It's the death of the greatest generation, my parents' generation. It's the passing or the diminishing of the power of the right-wing racist crackers left over from the boomer generation, the kids that I grew up with, you know, who are still out there in rural Michigan with, you know, going hunting and not that I'm opposed to hunting, but, you know, it's Gen X, Gen Y, you know, young people are just like not into that stuff, right? It's the passing of the gays, gods, and guns coalition that the Republicans have so reliably depended on. So this is a very progressive election. Clean sweep for marriage equality, 4-0. The President Obama didn't even need Ohio. But one of the things, a couple of things here. Number one, with regard to Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, Virginia. I was doing election coverage last night on RT, and we were sitting around waiting for these states to come in, and surprise, surprise, they're the voter suppression states. Why was it taking so long for them to come in? Because they had suppressed the vote. And as I have been saying on this program for 9 years now, the Democrats are crazy when they refuse to address issues like the privatization of our elections and the suppression of the vote by Republicans, because they're afraid that it'll cause Democrats to say, oh, you mean that voting machine might not accurately record my vote? I guess I won't show up. Or, oh, you mean they're going to ask for ID and they're going to give me a hard time at the poll? I guess I won't show up. And I have been saying all these years, and I've said this to Democrats elected officials, I have said it to the head of the DN, two different heads of the DNC, one of whom agreed with me, by the way, Howard Dean. I have said this to a number of Democratic officials, both on the air and in private. I believe that when Democrats start pointing out this 30-year history of the Republican voter suppression effort that goes all the way back to Paul Weyrich, when they start pointing that out, and when they point out that our vote is something that never should have been privatized. I mean, you can have a debate. I have debates on this program all the time about whether power systems should be privatized. Half all the electricity in the United States right now is generated by publicly owned utilities. I think it should be 100%. I think every community should be responsible for their own power. And then you don't have debacles like we have here in D.C. where we've got a private company, Pepco, and they're so understaffed, they've cut their staff so much that every time there's a disaster, they got to call in people from other states and freak out, and people don't know what they're doing. It takes forever, and it's a mess. Or public water supplies. They want to privatize water. Privatizing roads, privatizing parking meters, privatizing, you know, we can debate the privatizing schools. We can debate these things. You know my position. I think these are all parts of the common. But why we would privatize our vote without even having a debate about it? And the excuse, now get this. Get this. Even Democrats bought this. The excuse to privatize our vote and put it on electronic voting machines. And you, by now, you've probably seen all the YouTubes that are floating around about people trying to vote for President Obama last night, and it kept lighting up for Mitt Romney. It happened in all over the country. And probably on conservative websites, there's the opposite happening as well. Who knows? But the rationale that was made was, well, look at all those dimpled chads and hanging chads and pimpled chads and whatever down in Florida. We can't have a mess like that again in the butterfly ballot. It was hard to read. It was confusing. And so we're going to go to machines that are simple. We're going to solve the Florida problem. Now, in 2000, they were actually able to take all those ballots with the dimpled and pimpled and pregnant chads, load them in a 16-wheeler, drive them up to New York State, where a consortium of news agencies actually spent the next 12 months counting them all very carefully with bipartisan observers, and concluded that no matter how you count it, if you counted the entire state of Florida, which is what the Florida Supreme Court ordered in 2000, and the U.S. Supreme Court stopped, that Al Gore was elected president of the United States. So there was a paper trail. So in my opinion, the Republicans, Jim Baker, Karl Rove, these guys looked at this and said, holy cow, there's a paper trail here. And in fact, the New York Times, even, 2 weeks after 9/11, 3 weeks after 9/11, wrote an article about how George W. Bush isn't really president. They buried it in the 17th paragraph, but it's there. You can read it. We can't have any more paper trails. And so in 2002, 2 years after that election, a year after Bush was outed as having lost, they passed the Help America Vote Act with Democrats on board. Say, oh, yeah, well, let's not have any more pimpled chads. Let's have electronic voting machines. This is crazy. So anyhow, what I've been saying all these years is that when you tell Democrats about these problems, they don't say, oh, I think I'll not show up. Instead, they say, damn it, if they're going to steal 2 million votes, I'm going to show up with four. Or we are, collectively. If they're going to knock 2 million of us off the roll, 4 million of us are going to show up. And that's what happened last night. I believe that that's what happened 4 years ago. I believe the vote was undercounted. We still don't even know what's going on in Florida because of the voter suppression efforts. These voter suppression efforts, we have to go after this. When Obama went off script last night and said, we got to do something about that, that's when I cheered.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Because I think the Democrats are even starting to get it. Hey, big deal. That actually is a big deal. I know all our lines are slammed, we're gonna get you all in for much of the rest of the day to just, you know, comment on what's going on. But I just, you know, I want to get some thoughts out here. Another one. We don't elect leaders in the United States. You won't find the word leader in the U.S. Constitution or even in the discussions that leading up to the writing of the Constitution, the notes that James Madison kept or in the Federalist Papers. I mean, any of that stuff, they were all very clear. We are electing representatives. This is a representative democratic republic. And what that means is that we've sent people to Congress who, yeah, we vote for them because they more or less, you know, I like what Elizabeth Warren says, so I'm going to vote for her. But it even goes beyond that. And that's why when I opened the show, I said, now begins our real work. Because if we're not pushing people, particularly the President of the United States, if we're not pushing our elected representatives to move in a more progressive direction, and if this was not a, this was a landslide progressive mandate. This was not a Bill Clinton DLC election, in my opinion. This was a Franklin Roosevelt election. This morning I was watching MSNBC and Alex Wagner was on her show. It was just before we headed over here. And she had on a presidential historian and a couple of commentators. And the question was, will Obama get anything done in his second term? And the conventional wisdom, this is the Beltway wisdom, right? This is what everybody here in Washington, D.C. thinks. Well, you know, presidents didn't get so much done in their second terms. LBJ got the Great Society passed, but he also had the Vietnam War, so kind of washed out. But, hey, A, I thought getting the Great Society passed was a huge big deal. But, B, that really wasn't LBJ's second term. I mean, his first term was the last year and a half of the Kennedy presidency. Ran for re-election, got elected. That was his first real term. He wanted to run for a second term after that in 68. And his own party said, no, sorry, the Vietnam War has tainted you. And so Lyndon Johnson, his vice president, ran. But the point that was made in this program, and that I'm hearing, and not just there, I don't mean to pick on Alex Wagner, she does a great job, but the point that's being made by media pundits all over the place, and the reason why this is so important is because, just as we learned with the debates, it's not what actually happens that people remember, it's what the pundits said happens that people remember. And the pundits are all running around going, yeah, Obama's not going to get that much done in his second term, because presidents just don't do that in their second terms. And I would say, well, maybe that's true. You know, Reagan didn't get that much done in his second term, really. And George W. Bush didn't get that much done in his second term, really. And Bill Clinton was fighting off impeachment in his second term, you know. And so it's second terms, big deal. That's the conventional wisdom right now. None of those guys came into office with the Dow at half of what it had been just a year before and 800,000 people losing their jobs a month. None of those guys, none of these contemporary presidents who won a second term came into office during during a Great Depression. The last president for whom that experience was real was Franklin Roosevelt. And Franklin Roosevelt's second term, he took names and kicked ass. He got a lot done in the first term, right? I mean, he got a lot done in the first 2 weeks. Within the first 2 weeks, he had in place, he had 10,000 people working on CCC within 2 weeks. Within 2 months, he had over a million people employed, the CCC, the WPA. He was just rip-roaring in his first term. He got so much done. 1935, the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act, the Social Security Act. I mean, all that stuff came out of his first term. Then he goes into his second term, and he takes on the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm not making this up. I mean, the only other president to do this was Abraham Lincoln. And that might have been in his second term, too. I'm not really sure. I don't know when. Lincoln's second term was tragically cut very, very short. But he took on the U.S. Supreme Court. Said, okay, that's it. You guys are knocking down the New Deal. All these things that we passed in the first term, you're declaring them unconstitutional. We are going to add, you know, the Constitution gives Congress the right to define how many people are sitting on the Supreme Court. And so Franklin Roosevelt went to Congress and said, let's create a position called Justice Emeritus. And the Justice Emeritus position has one vote. It could be two guys. It could be three guys. It could be five guys. It only happens when the justices hit the age of 70. At that point in time, as I recall, four or five of the Supreme Court justices were 70 or older. So FDR said, let's make them all have one vote, and we'll just add more people to the court. He was going to take the court up to 12, 13 people. And he would get to appoint them. And he had Democrats in the Senate, and Democrats in the House. He didn't need the House, but he had Democrats in the Senate. They would confirm them. So if you really want to look at a second term, look at FDR's second term. Yeah, there were some hiccups there. In 37, he decided to pull back a little bit on the New Deal. A huge mistake. He re-accelerated things in 38. And then of course, the World War II came along, which kind of changed things a little bit. But second terms, FDR's second term, he got an awful lot done. And I think, frankly, President Obama has the potential to get a mind-boggling amount of stuff done in his second term if we push him and push the people around him. We need to get card check. We need to roll back Taft-Hartley. We need to do something about global warming. Thank goodness the president mentioned that last night too. I thought his acceptance speech last night was one of the best speeches he's given since his inauguration. I mean, it was good, solid stuff. And I believe that there is a mandate for progressive leadership. And given that Republicans are controlling the House of Representatives, he needs to get in there. Actually, all the Democrats need to get in there, particularly the Democrats in the House. Steny Hoyer or whoever replaces him needs to get in there and exploit the divisions, exploit the fact that John Boehner is saying, hey, let's work together. And Eric Cantor is like looking for, where did I put that switchblade? This is a time so ripe with opportunity.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I have not yet even begun to tell you about all the communities across the United States that voted to overturn Citizens United last night. Move to Amend had a huge night.
The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine?
Well, that's essentially what Obama said last night. The best is yet to come. Well, great choice, Shano. There's a great thread over at Democratic Underground, a serious and sympathetic post for any lurking conservatives. I want to get into what happened with Move to Amend. There's I got a whole pile of stuff for you, but we have 3 hours. So let's get some of your thoughts in here, too. I know that this is a great place to ventilate and share expressions and opinions. Joan in Elk Creek, Virginia. Hey, Joan, what's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Tom. I wanted to say first, thank you so much for what you do. It's really making a difference. Not only do I watch your show, but my two sons who are in their 20s and 30s watch your show, and I think that really made a difference with the vote, especially with the young people yesterday, and just want to say keep up the good work.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joan. And I agree. There is a generation coming up that is looking at the crazy way the Karl Rove-style politics have been done and saying, enough already. We want some honest politics. Thank you, Joan. Thank you very much. And one of the things that we need to address, for example, is gerrymandering, this whole thing. We should have a national law that says districts have to be polygons, right? They have to have, regular edges. They can no longer look like salamanders. Anyhow, Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Hey, Tom, by the way, I voted for Jill Stein yesterday, neither of the other two parties. But
okay.
Listen to this. I believe what's really going on is a distraction away from what's really going to happen in 2016. What we have here is a conditioning for us to accept some kind of war, whether it's going to be a civil unrest, like Sam said, he mentioned like a civil war. I don't think it's going to be a civil war, but it's going to be, we look at the red and blue states, we look at the black and white issue that came up, and now we also see class structure and race. There's going to be some kind, they're preparing us, conditioning us for something that they're doing. Obama won, but he won. We were distracted by all the voter suppression things going on.
Yeah.
We were distracted by the voting machine, privatization, all this stuff.
I think what you're describing, Michael, is the Republican strategy. They're trying to split us against each other. They're trying to use hatred and fear and tribalism, essentially, for lack of a better word. Factionalism is how James Madison would have described it, as ways to divide us from each other. President Obama made it very clear last night in his acceptance speech he would have none of that, that we are not the red states of America or the blue states of America. We are the United States of America. And I think this is an important point, but it doesn't mean roll over for the damn Democrats or the damn Republicans, excuse me. But the other point I will get into as we continue through the program is it is time now for Harry Reid to say that's it to the filibuster, because there's going to be Supreme Court justices appointed. And if there's a filibuster, Obama's going to have to find moderates to put on the court. And if there's no filibuster, he can find genuine progressives to put on the court. Good people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who almost certainly will be retiring in the next couple of years. She's quite elderly. She has cancer. She's the most progressive member of the United States Supreme Court. It's really important not to have a filibuster so that the Republicans cannot block a replacement of Ruth Bader Ginsburg with somebody of the quality, caliber, and worldview of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Doug in Jamul, California. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you must be like blowing up by now. I get to throw up your leg is like going through the roof.
I don't understand.
Oh, you're just, aren't you happy?
Well, by and large, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're real happy your socialist principles run the day. My question is this. Do you really think Republicans are going to abandon their Republican constitutional principles for socialistic principles of you and your buddy Obama, when Obama's going to fight most of his term impeachment for Libya, standing by watching America?
Here's the problem with all that, Doug. Here's the problem with your rant. You say Republican principles. Now, I remember when Dwight Eisenhower, the Republican, wrote a letter to his brother David saying, you know, there are a few Republicans who think that we can abandon organized labor and we can abandon Social Security and privatize it. I realize there are a few Texas oil millionaires who believe this, the Hunt brothers, he called out by name. He said their number is small and they are stupid. The Republican principles that you're referring to are something that in the last few years, a large chunk of the Republican Party has been hijacked by the Hunt brothers, by the Koch brothers and all of their various front groups. Now we see, there's $11 million that was funneled into California out of an Arizona money laundering operation. You go three steps back and there it is. It's the Koch brothers. You've got all these billionaires who are pushing these Ayn Rand principles that only benefit billionaires. But the old-fashioned Republicans who actually were concerned about stability in society, about a society that was about the middle class, the Republicans of my dad's era, the Republicans, even the Richard Nixon Republicans. Richard Nixon in 1972 proposed a national health insurance program that would have insured pretty much everybody in this country. It was almost identical to what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts. If you're talking about those kind of Republican principles, I don't see a problem. But what I'm seeing is a Republican Party that has gone insane, Doug.
Tom, you talk about filibustering. Man, you just filibuster your hearts out. I was talking about constitutional principles of limited government with enumerated powers, not 51% of the
Doug, code. Are you talking about the Articles of Confederation or the Constitution?
I'm talking about the constitutional principles.
Where is the word enumerated in the Constitution?
With enumerated powers.
Doug, where in the Constitution does it say that the government is limited or that the powers that the government gives itself are enumerated?
It's the Constitution itself.
Please tell me the sentence.
You ask me a question, then you won't let me answer.
Where is it?
The Constitution is a
okay, I have my Constitution
document.
In my hand. You tell me where to look, and I'll read it to you. Tell me where it is.
The Constitution is a limited document. It's the limited document. It's
right.
Not unlimited. It tells the government what they can do or what they can't do. There's limits on the powers of Congress. It's not unlimited. Do you agree?
Okay. Well, No, I don't agree, because there's nowhere in the Constitution where it says that the powers are limited, and there's no place in the Constitution where it says that we are going to enumerate them.
Well, do you think the founders created an unlimited document where the power of the federal government had awesome, unlimited power?
By and large, yes, Doug. In fact, if you go back and you read the debates between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists in the late 17 or the early 1780s, 1786, 1787, that led to the Constitutional Convention, the problem was that under the Articles of Confederation, which we operated on, we had three presidents under the Articles of Confederation before George Washington. And this was, you know, as we were wrapping up this the Revolutionary War and after the Revolutionary War. Under the Articles of Confederation, the federal government did not have the power to impose taxes. It did not have a power to regulate commerce between the states, which is fairly draconian power. It did not have the power to basically, you know, shove laws down the states' throats, things like the anti-drug laws, stuff like that. It did not have the power to spend money at a federal level because it didn't have the money to tax things. It didn't have the power to provide for the general welfare. And what we figured out with these 13 states, each running on a very limited government basis with enumerated powers, was that it didn't work. The Anti-Federalists failed. They lost. The Federalists won, and they passed a constitution. And here's, Doug, just to help you out here, go to Article 1, which is about the House of Representatives and the Senate. That's where the Congress is defined. Article 1 is Congress. Article 2 is the presidency. Article 3 is the judiciary. Go to Article 1, Section 8. It's titled Powers Granted to Congress. Okay, these are the enumerated powers that you're talking about. And there's a list of them. Some of them are quite specific, to coin money and regulate the value thereof, for example, to provide for the punishment of counterfeiting, to establish post offices, although the Republicans now want to privatize that, to promote the progress of science and useful arts. Oh, gee, we're supposed to be paying for research? Here's the very first one. Let me read the first sentence to you. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts, and provide for the common defense and the general welfare of the United States.
Yes, now, limited to the powers listed below.
No, it does not say that. It does not say that.
That's what it refers to. And for you to go on saying
it does
that
not say to,
not, is,
Doug,
is
I am
lie.
Reading it to you.
You're lying about the Constitution. You're putting progressive propaganda, and you're propagandizing the Constitution.
Well, this is, Doug, to the extent that this is progressive propaganda, it's, you know, it was George Washington who said, I hope that I shall ever live to see America be a more progressive nation. But again, Article 1, Section 8, Sentence 1, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States, but all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. That's end of Sentence 1. Sentence 2, in other words, everybody has to pay taxes, everybody in the country. It's not just your state can't just say, we're not going to do it. Where these guys are saying, oh, we don't have to go along with the rules. It's very popular in the nullification. Yeah. In other words, this makes nullification impossible, because nullification was possible under the Articles of Confederation. Section 2, sentence 2, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Number 3, to regulate commerce with the foreign nations and among the several states and the Indian tribes. And it goes through this long list until it gets to the very end. And at the very end, number 18, it says, to make all other laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing power, and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Doug, that sounds to me pretty damn unlimited. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
One of these days, one of these conservatives is going to call who actually has a constitution in front of them, and we will have a good conversation. I'm looking forward to that.
I don't care too much for money. Money can't buy me love.
Well, and money can't buy elections either. This is one of the great lessons that came out of the campaign yesterday. Carly Fiorina, the former head of HP, learned it when she tried to throw, what was it, $74 million of her own money, or some mind-boggling amount of money, into running for the United States Senate from California. Meg Whitman discovered it, the billionaire founder of eBay, or co-founder, or whatever she was, CEO of eBay. when she decided that she was going to try and run for governor of California. And Jerry Brown kicked her around the block. Linda McMahon discovered it. She put a whole bunch of her own money into paying people $100 an hour to stand in line wearing T-shirts to say, people of color, to wear T-shirts saying, vote for Barack Obama and Linda McMahon. And she was the Republican, right? And those people were really PO'd when they discovered, you know, when somebody came along and said, hey, do you know who she really is? And it was like, what? You're kidding. I can't, you know. Anyhow, Nick in Lyndhurst, New Jersey. Hey, Nick, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I think the jubilation that we all feel about Obama winning is understandable, and it's great for a day or two, maybe three, we can keep on partying. But that's about it. If we go back to sleep like most of us did, or too many of us did in 2008, it's going to be counterproductive. And basically, it's great that we avoided the horror of a Romney presidency, and that's wonderful. So the worst, you know, we avoided that bullet.
Right.
But if we just freeze the status quo in place, as you've been saying in a different way for the past half hour or so, you know, we're not going to get very far.
Yeah, this is why I opened the show by saying today the work begins.
Right. So the point I want to make to extend and sharpen that a little bit more, what you're saying, is that we need to understand that the establishment of the Democratic Party is not really progressive. And until we learn that lesson, for example, the Obama campaign has access to what, maybe 20, 30 million names, email addresses that they could, if they really wanted to, organize a grassroots effort of people in neighborhoods to meet and keep on meeting to get involved and increase voter registration and to run for county committee and take over the local Democratic clubs and machine, you know, the party that exists.
Right.
And make a
what you're describing, by the way, is what happened in the 30s under Franklin Roosevelt.
That's what we need to do right now. And,
right.
I mean, I would love if Obama took on that kind of leadership role, but I'm not going to sit here waiting for him to do it.
No, and we can't. In fact, he won't do it until we push him into it.
That's
and
right.
And that's why progressives need to be right now contacting their local Democratic Party offices and saying, how do I run for precinct committee person? How do I get involved? Because there's an election coming up in 2 years. It's going to be a midterm election, just like 2010 was. It's going to be an opportunity. Hopefully, over the next 2 years, America will see the naked obstruction that is happening, has been happening, and almost certainly will continue to happen in the U.S. House of Representatives, which is controlled by Republicans and the Tea Party. They will see how horrible that is, and they will throw enough of those bums out. I think it's around 35 or 40 now. I don't have the final count. In fact, there's still a couple of races that are being contested. But, you know, it's not that many people. It's not that many districts that have to flip to put the House back in Democratic hands. Hold the Senate in the election of 2014, because there will be senators up for re-election. A third of the Senate will be up for re-election. And move forward. You know, and make it even more progressive. But you're absolutely right, Nick. It's going to take all of us. Thank you very much for the
things on the Senate. We need the filibuster reform, and in the House, if that Republicans obstruct the way they tried to do the last four years, we must not compromise. We got to fight back.
No, we got to raise absolute holy hell, and that's where I think, you know, people like Alan Grayson being in there is great, because he's not afraid to speak out. Nick, thanks for the call. Well said, John in Nampa, Idaho. Hey, John, what's up? Oh, John left. Randy in Somerville, South Carolina. Hey, Randy, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. It's a great day in America, isn't it?
It is, but it's just the beginning. This is morning, and there's a long day of work ahead of us.
Well, I hear you.
Metaphorically
speaking. I've
been
listening to you since about 2004, a first-time caller. And I just wanted to comment about the stock market decline today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if anyone else sees the irony of how George W. Bush was in the Cayman Islands recently talking to investors of the 1% on how to invest outside of America.
Yeah, last week.
Meanwhile, you had Bill Clinton working his butt off for Obama. And to me, this is just a classic example of white right-wing hypocrisy. And it seems to me that today maybe there are a few 1%ers taking their money out of the market.
Yeah, I don't think that's it, Randy, because if you look at the futures markets overnight, which typically predict the way that the stock market is going to go. The futures market, once Obama was called president, the futures market, which would be where the Dow would be right now, were up 50 points. And then what happened was Mario Draghi, the head, I don't know if he's the head or the head economist for the European Union, came out with this very, very downbeat statement about how austerity, my words, not his, but basically the essence of what he said, how austerity being applied in Europe is basically continuing to damage the European economy, and things are going to get worse before they get better. And as soon as that happened, the European stock futures all went in the tank. And when the European markets opened, they all opened down dramatically. And as a consequence, now the U.S. stock market is following that trend. So I think this is, I think that this is all about what's going on in Europe. But we'll see. Randy, thanks for the call. John in Nampa, Idaho. Hey, John, you want to try it again?
Hi, Tom. Yes. I don't know what happened.
Got 1 minute until the end of the hour here, so it's all yours.
Anyway, what happened to me was I went to my, first of all, my wife Googled where do we vote. Our address did not exist, apparently.
Huh.
And then I went to where we usually vote. There was no voting, polling going on there or anything.
Right.
So they sent me to another address, the Northwest Nazarene University, and I wasn't on their list there. And they did find on an obscure map, I might add, where I was to vote. I did go there, and I was able to vote. I did have to persevere.
I was glad that I did. Well, good on you. I mean, good on you for your perseverance, but here's the thing. It shouldn't be necessary in the United States of America. We can put a man on the moon. We invented the internet and the transistor. Come on. We can't figure out how to let people vote? John, good on you. Congratulations, and thanks for sharing your story with us of your hither and yon experiences. We need to make this a straightforward, simple, easy process. Voting should be the last of our concerns. Right, you know, how to get to the polls, getting to the polls, how long you have to stand in line, should be easy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We have seen evidence of voter suppression, anti-American. This is the blame Americans first crowd, right? The Republican Party, who in these battleground states, when they have control of the states, they engineer it so that Americans who want to vote can't speak, can't vote. We still don't know what the vote is in Florida. Florida hasn't been called yet. Why? Because Rick Scott. I mean, because down in Florida, they're throwing people off the voter lists. They're making it harder to vote. They're making it more confusing to vote. Florida is all about it, and has been for, probably a century. It's time to do something about it. It has been all about suppressing the vote. Anybody who had to wait in line more than 15 minutes, in my opinion, suffered an injury, paid a poll tax, right? Is your time worth anything? Do you get paid for your time? Is your time worth $10 an hour? Is your time worth $20 an hour? Is your time worth $30 an hour? What's your time worth? Is it worth $5 an hour? Whatever it's worth, that's the poll tax that you paid. If you're standing in line 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, that's a poll tax. And frankly, I would like to see the U.S. Justice Department and Eric Holder say, making people stand in line intentionally, this is not an act of God. This is intentional voter suppression. That when that happens, that is a poll tax, and poll taxes are illegal. It's written into the Constitution. It was an amendment to the Constitution. Take out poll taxes. Should not be. Look at the state of Ohio. In 2004, you had lines where people had to stand in line in the John Kerry, George W. Bush election. For in some cases, particularly in inner cities, in African-American areas, in poor areas, in student areas, in elderly areas, in the places where people tended to vote Democratic. What you had over and over again was 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12-hour lines. 4 years later, in 2008, 4 years ago, a Democrat was elected Secretary of State. And she, I'm pretty sure it was a woman, and she made sure that everybody had access to the vote. Let's allocate the number of voting machines. Now, you know my take on that, but that's a whole other rant. Let's allocate the number of voting machines and polling places based on population so that when people show up, they're not going to have to wait more than 15 or 20 minutes. And in the election of 2008, and let's have a few weeks of early voting. Let's have 3 weekends, 3 weeks of early voting. Let's let the steam out of this, balloon, as it were, before it pops. I know I'm mangling metaphors here, but. And in 2008, there were no problems in Ohio. And then John Husted takes over, a hustler, a Republican, a man who committed crimes against democracy, and says, we can't have people voting in poor districts. Took it all the way to the Supreme Court that he wanted to restrict the ability of people to early vote, that he wanted to force people to stand in long lines, that he wanted to make it harder for people to vote. Because it's called point shaving. They thought that they could just, we could shave 2% off, 2% of the people are just going to say, not 2% of the total electorate, but maybe 5 or 10% of the electorate in those districts that are heavily Democratic, after the second hour in line, they're going to just say, screw it, I'm out of here. I got to get to work. Or I'm paying a babysitter for this. Or I got to use the bathroom. Or something. I'm hungry. At some point, people say enough is enough. And Husted's plan, him and John Kasich, the plan that these guys had, the former Fox News commentators, the governor of Ohio, the plan that these guys had was, if we can shave off 10% of the vote, or whatever the percentage was that they had in mind, and I guarantee you that they had a percentage in mind, this was done intentionally. In Florida, in Virginia, in Ohio, in Colorado, in those states where Republicans were in charge of the process. We can shave 10% of the vote off the minority vote, off the poor vote, off the working class vote, off the student vote, off the people on Medicare and Medicaid vote. If we can shave 10% of that off, that's 3% of the electorate. And we were expecting Obama would win by 2.5%. So Romney wins by half a point. This is why Romney was so shocked last night. This is why Karl Rove couldn't believe what he was hearing and melted down on air on Fox News to the point where other Fox hosts were going, awkward. Because they were like, we took $1 billion from these billionaires and we paid for this damn election. It's ours. Was the position that they were taking. We hired Nathan Sproul to make sure that those people couldn't vote. And not just him. I'm sure that there was a whole bunch of them out there. We had the party machine out there. We had people signing up, registering Republicans and throwing away registration forms of Democrats. We had people flipping the registration forms. We had secretaries of state going through and purging millions of people in the last 2 years have been purged off the voting rolls. The vast majority of them, people of color, people who are union members, people who live in urban areas, people who go to colleges, people who move frequently, which is a sign that they're probably lower socioeconomic status because they're having to move for their work or looking for work, and they're more likely to vote Democratic. Millions of people taken off the voter rolls. This is not an act of God. This is not an accident. I did not hear. I watched three different networks last night in the post-election coverage. I was on one network through almost all of the election coverage up until the election was called. But after that, Louise and I went home, and we spent the next hour and a half channel surfing and I kept waiting to hear one reporter point out that Ohio wasn't called until after 11 o'clock, and Florida still hasn't been called because of voter suppression efforts. It's just that simple. Why is it that in the white suburbs, nobody ever waits more than 10 or 15 minutes? I mean, I told this story a couple of days ago. I told the story on Monday after voting on Saturday. Saturday, when I voted, I waited 32 minutes to vote. It's twice as long as I think the longest I've ever waited to vote in my lifetime. Because I've never lived in a swing state in a minority area or a working class area. And I think that a lot of Americans have that experience. You know, it's like they look at these pictures of particularly African Americans snaking around the block, you know, for going for blocks and blocks, and somehow, because the media doesn't say it was John Husted who did this, it was John Kasich who did this, it was the Republican establishment in Ohio and Rick Scott in Florida that did this, because the media won't tell the truth. People are blaming the victims. They're blaming the voters. They're saying, oh, look at that. A lot of voters must have turned out. What a surprise. No, it wasn't a surprise. It wasn't a surprise. It wasn't a surprise that there were not long lines in Vermont or in Boston. We need to call this what it is. It's a crime against democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And then get about the process of doing something about it. 15 minutes past the hour.
How you like me now? How you like me now?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, there are some who are saying, not so happy. Michelle Malkin's a live election blog. I think she was expressing the frustration and the shock, frankly, that a lot of people who watch Fox News and listen to right-wing talk radio experience. On this program, you have never heard me say President Obama is going to win this election. In fact, if anything, you've heard me over and over and over again say you need to get out and vote because they're going to steal this election if they can. And if we don't show up in overwhelming numbers, they will, because we saw it happen twice in 2000 and 2004. And we don't want to see it happen again. But over on the Reich, they were basically saying, don't worry, everything's under control. We got this thing. You know, the billionaires have bought this thing off. Not to worry. Everything's going to be happy. Michelle Balkan freaked out. Oh, this is a comment on her blog. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I was a little baffled that it would be Michelle Balkan. This is John in Virginia commenting on Michelle Malkin's blog. And all the more important, actually, because Michelle is one of the pundits who, you know, part of the right-wing punditocracy, everything's fine, don't worry. And so John in Virginia says, this truly is a disaster, and there's no recovering from it, ever. Rove and Morris and other pundits need to be tarred, feathered, and ridden out of the public arena on the rail. And then he goes on, therefore, I, for one, am done with Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, Morris, Rove, and every other conservative making millions off of my listening to their BS, buying their books, going to their shows, and anything else they peddle. And let me just point out that this election is actually going to significantly, measurably increase the revenue for Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. The thing that really put Rush Limbaugh's show on the map, because, you know, he went on the air in 87, but by 92, he was, you know, a national figure, but not a big deal, was the election of Bill Clinton. Frankly, if Mitt Romney had won, this show would make more money because, you know, people would be going, oh, my God, what do we do? You know, it would energize our base. People would be freaked out. They'd want to know what's going on. And, you know, I mean, I can just tell you, I've been in this business long enough. When you're the loyal opposition, people rally around. When it looks like it's under control, a lot of people just say, okay, cool, everything's fine, I'm going to go listen to rock and roll. So, but Some people on the right are getting it. He says, I, for one, am done with Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, Morris, Rove, and every other conservative making millions off our listening to their BS. He said, they have no skin in the game, being fat cats themselves. So in the end, Obama's winnings keeps them on the air and their coffers full of idiots like us sucking up for another 4 years and longer. Nice comment, John, over on Michelle Malkin's blog. This also, a dog posting over at Democratic Underground. I mentioned this in the first hour, a serious and sympathetic post for any lurking conservatives. He says, your pollsters and your pundits lied to you. They did. They told you all the mainstream polls were skewed. Right, remember that? They told you it was going to be a Romney landslide. They said their internal polls showed that Romney was ahead, Pennsylvania was in play. They lied. I'm quoting Dog from DU. You can read this over at democraticunderground.com. They did it because they wanted to manipulate you and make sure you were excited enough to go out and vote. Yes, that's why they did it. They lied to you about other things as well. They lied to you about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. They lied to you about climate change. They're lying about the income taxes and wealth redistribution. The biggest lie they tell, though, are about us, the liberals. The liberals, as Limbaugh says it. And then Dog goes on to say, the truth is this about liberals. We believe in hard work. And it would be best if every able-bodied person had a job. Absolutely. In fact, let me take that a step further. Franklin Roosevelt said out loud, and I haven't heard a president since then say this out loud, and I would like to, that the government should be the employer of last resort. That if people genuinely can't find a job and genuinely want one, there are jobs that need to be done and the government should hire them. Which is what FDR did, and it's how he got us out of the Great Depression with the CCC and the WPA. And so number one, liberals believe in hard work. Number two, liberals believe in families. Strong families make a strong America. Dog so nailed this. Number three, liberals believe in the freedom of religion. Liberals believe in success. Now, we don't think it's unreasonable that people who are very successful because they are making heavy use of the commons, of the court systems, of the tax systems, of all, everything that's available, I'll pay a reasonable fee for that, a tax for that. But that's not punishing success. That's the price of success. The millionaires and billionaires, they still get to walk away with millions and billions, even though they're paying a 39% tax rate instead of a 15% tax rate like Mitt Romney does. We believe in free enterprise capitalism, or at least regulated capitalism. Now, I would say I also believe in democratic socialism. I believe that the commons should be regulated via the democratic process, the stuff that we all own collectively. And the things that we don't own collectively, the private industry, should be run according to a set of rules which say, first and foremost, if you're going to run a business, you're going to run that business because it will generate a public good. If you can demonstrate that your business generates a public good, now the public good could be as simple as giving somebody a job. You could make a really stupid product, but if you're giving somebody a job, if you're doing a public good, and that public good outweighs the harm that you're doing, the pollution or whatever that you're doing, fine, go for it. And we believe in America. Dog says, we are not the monsters Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck told you we are, or we were. Your pollsters and your pundits lied to you. It's a brilliant thread over at Democratic Underground. Serious and sympathetic post for any lurking conservatives. It's rare that I read other people's rants, but that was really worth sharing. Back with your thoughts and mine and the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up on 28 minutes past the hour, I'm going to drop into our free live chat room over at TomHartman.com and see what the greatest minds on earth are talking about. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I've been ranting for a couple of hours here. Let's pick up some of your rants. Tina in Staten Island, New York, listening on WWRL. Hey, Tina, what's up?
Hi, Tom. So great to speak with you. I'm a huge fan. Thank you so much for everything you do. I just wanted to call because I'm actually a law student at Brooklyn Law School, and a group of us went down to Pennsylvania yesterday to serve as legal observers to make sure that things went smoothly. They had the voter ID law. Things were confusing, so we thought that there would be voter suppression going on. So we went down there, and what I witnessed, I was stationed in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and it was just, it was astounding. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Minority voters were being turned away. My first issue, first of all, the discretion of the election officials is really mind-boggling to me because a couple of my friends got stationed where there were old Democrats working there, and they were able to really work together with the election workers, whereas I got stationed somewhere where there were all Republicans, and so they were very hostile towards me. And I had to stay outside. I stayed outside for 14 hours, speaking to voters, engaging, making sure no one was getting turned away. And people, first of all, they only had 20 provisional ballots, which is ludicrous. My friends that were at other poll sites, they had hundreds of provisional ballots. So what happens is a provisional ballot is so that if you're not on the voter rolls and you believe in good faith that you are registered and you should be able to vote there, you fill out a provisional ballot, and then the Board of Elections looks into it. If you are truly registered, it counts. If you're not, it gets thrown out.
Right.
So they only had 20 of those, and I had to fight tooth and nail to get anybody to be able to cast a provisional ballot. And what wound up happening was I noticed that all of the women that were certain that they registered through welfare, apparently when you sign up for welfare, they give you a voter registration form.
Right.
Across the state, all of the legal observers that I spoke with, these women were not actually registered. And we, you know, we checked up with the Board of Elections to check on our own to see if they were registered and they just weren't on the rolls. And they weren't registered. All of these registration forms seem to, I don't know, get lost. And also, every problem that I had was with minority voters, either Black or Hispanic. They were redistricted, so they lived maybe a couple blocks away, and they were told that their poll sites were in other cities that was hard for them to get to, especially if they don't have a car. Or they were blatantly lied to and told, sorry, this isn't your poll site. You have to go to wherever, somewhere else. And then when I would check, when they would come out and tell me that, I would check on the Pennsylvania State website, and it actually was their poll site. And so they had to go back and wait online again. Or they were just told, so maybe it wasn't their poll site, and they were told the wrong poll site to go to. Or they were told, sorry, the number is busy. We can't figure out your poll
site. So was this, Tina, were these malicious Republicans who had volunteered to be poll workers and then were messing with people who showed up to vote who had a little pigment in their skin? Is that what you're saying?
I believe that it was malicious. I mean, I guess they could argue that it's negligence or incompetence, but the fact that not one white person had this issue, to me, speaks volumes.
Wow.
I mean, how could it be that it was becoming almost a joke that when I saw minority voters walking in, I knew they were going to walk out with a problem, that it was such a high percentage. And they were being lied to, being told to go to the wrong place. They wouldn't even look it up. I had to go in the poll site and argue with them, which, you know, I tried not to be confrontational, but it was impossible because they were refusing to give provisional ballots, which is the law. You have to give a provisional ballot. If they believe in good faith, they are registered there and they're not on the rolls, you have to give a provisional ballot. They refuse. Besides that, you have them actually lying about where they have to go as far as poll sites. I had the judge of elections at my poll site come out and scream in my face and tell me that I don't have the right to tell voters that they have the right to vote provisional ballots, that he'll decide who has the right to vote on a provisional ballot.
Amazing.
And I said, sir, it's the law. It's their right. It's nobody to decide. It's their right.
Were these poll workers,
know their right.
Were these poll workers who were turning away people of color, were they themselves people of color or were they Caucasians?
Oh, no, they were Republicans. I found this out later when apparently it was a small town, so everybody knew each other.
Right.
So
they weren't just white people. They were white Republicans.
They were white Republicans, and that's why they were extremely hostile to me and to all of the minority voters. When I went in with the one woman who registered through welfare,
right. They
were just so condescending to her. I had to beg.
Have you contacted the Justice Department, Tina?
I contacted the ACLU, and I went down with Organizing for America, so I filled out a bunch of incident reports. They're
Good. Definitely
looking into this.
Good.
And I'm certain something was done while I was there, because after he came out and screamed at me and told me that I couldn't tell people that he was calling the sheriff on me,
right.
I called the general counsel for the Pennsylvania Obama campaign,
right. And
he must have made some phone calls to, I guess, higher ups, and they were they weren't as hostile after that, and
right. People
weren't coming out complaining as much. There were long lines as well. I don't know if that was malicious, because it seemed like there was a lot more white voters than minority voters, so I couldn't imagine that they would make them wait in line. It could have just been a lot of them were elderly, and it seems like there was people were coming out saying there was empty voting booths, and
yeah. It
was just taking them so long, and two of them had to tally, or this is what I was being reported.
Well, and you know, if it's a Democratic neighborhood, there may be a lot of white voters who are registered as Democrats, so it might just be
definitely.
You know, so it's not just a race thing.
The feedback that I got from the voters, a lot of people were appreciative. You could tell the Republicans, because they were very hostile towards me, and you know, some people told me to go back where I belong and to leave, and that people should show ID.
Wow.
But, you know, I tried to remain neutral. I didn't say I was there with Organizing for America. I just said I'm a legal observer,
right. Because
at the end of the day, I wasn't there to sway any votes or to tell people who to vote for. I was just there to make sure that nobody that was eligible to vote was turned away. And sad to say, if I wasn't there, I don't know how many voters would have gotten turned away. And just being told, the one woman that was so condescending, told the woman, why are you even wasting your time filling out a provisional ballot? They're just going to throw it out anyway. Your vote's not going to count.
Wow.
I mean, just having people think that they're a part of the political process is so important. And to have poll workers have this huge discretion to be able to make these decisions and to tell people this and decide who gets a provisional ballot,
right.
I think it's a real mistake, and I think we shouldn't leave it up to, you know, these local governments to make these decisions when it comes to voting.
Yeah, and this is another reason why people of goodwill, rather than people with a partisan agenda, should be volunteering as poll workers. I've told the story many times when my mom was a volunteer poll worker for decades, and as I recall, at least a decade. And she was not particularly political. My dad was a gung-ho Republican, but my mom, you know, I think, frankly, she was a secret Democrat. But mostly she was just there to do her civic duty. And, you know, it was all about, I'm a part of the community. This is the community. You know, these were the old days when you'd recognize people. People would just sign in. Your signature was all that was enough. But Tina, you are going to make one heck of a great attorney someday. I congratulate you on your volunteer work.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
What you do.
Okay, thanks for calling. It's great to hear from you. Nathan in Hood River, Oregon. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I took your advice and ran for precinct chairman committee person and won with 97% of the vote.
Wow! So you are now one of the people in the Democratic Party who decides who's going to be on the primary ballots and who decides what the party platform is going to be, at least at the local level, right?
Exactly. And
cool.
I had more people calling me this year and asking me how to vote than ever before, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, that is marvelous.
The key to getting the problems figured out in the red states that we have is all about the message. We have to come up with some type of rural radio initiative where we can get an alternative voice
right. To
Hannity, Limbaugh, and O'Reilly in these rural markets. I grew up in a rural market in northern Wisconsin, and I happened to make the same paper that Brevard, the Some Girls Rape EV, made.
Right.
But I grew up in that area, and all you have is this, you know, the screech and preach machine and no alternatives. And if we, you know, people say, well, why are the red states, you know, why are those voters so dumb? They're not dumb. They're just misinformed, and misinformed is worse than being uninformed.
Yes.
And if we want to fix this problem that we have to address the fact that rural America does not get any message from pragmatic sources. It's all right. Corporate.
There are some energy. Cracks in that. I mean, this program, for example, is carried on Sirius XM, a satellite radio, although Sirius XM users tend to be a little more affluent, but still in a lot of rural areas, people get Sirius XM just because it gives them a wide variety of programming rather than just the one station in town. We're also on Free Speech TV, which is carried on both Dish and DirecTV, and that's where you hear a lot of calls from little towns in obscure red states, and these are people who, you know, they don't even have access to cable, and so they use a satellite TV system, and, you know, Free Speech TV carries that signal. So there is some good news, Nathan, but I agree with you. There needs to be a major radio initiative. It ain't going to happen, though, until somebody decides to roll back those provisions of the Telecommunications Act and start reinforcing the Sherman Act. I mean, there's some serious structural problems that need to be addressed first. Nathan, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And at some point today, Shane is going to decide which caller is going to get an autographed copy of one of my favorite books, Cracking the Code by Tom Hartman.
Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news?
Ah, yes, let's check in with the news. A new Talk Radio News Service report. Brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, signed the petition asking President Obama, now that the election's over, he's got to be feeling a lot more free to do it. And he should do it immediately. Asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman. You can sign that petition at free-don.org. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Victoria. Oh, and on the TV. Excuse me. Pardon me. I got to hit sneeze button there. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Something's going around here. I got to chow down some more cough syrup. So what's up?
Stocks in New York ended the day sharply lower, with the Standard & Poor's 500 index losing 2.4%, Dow Jones Industrial also 2.4%, NASDAQ Composite ending 2.5% lower. Asian shares sank and Asian stocks were mixed, not only because many executives favored Mitt Romney, but they had already factored in the likelihood of Mr. Obama winning a second term, but his partly divided government in Washington and also little prospect for compromise and the looming fiscal cliff, along with the gloomy economic outlook in Europe, which has also prompted selling in markets worldwide. Yeah. I predict, however, that they will get over themselves and stocks will rally within the next week.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, if you looked at the futures for the U.S. markets after Obama was declared the winner, they went up 50 points. They didn't start dropping until Draghi made that comment in Europe about how the economy, austerity wasn't helping and the economy is going to get bad. And then the European stock markets started tanking and U.S. market futures started tanking. This has nothing to do with Obama as much as Drudge, and Fox News want to spin it.
There's an awful lot of nervous Nellyism on Yes. Wall Street.
Yes. Well, and also then Mitch McConnell came out and said, no, we're still not inclined to play nice. That couldn't have helped.
Exactly. And today, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, and John Boehner, Speaker of the House, did offer fairly sharply different interpretations of the elections. Harry Reid wants to increase revenue into the federal government by raising taxes on the wealthy. And John Boehner is going after his fairly elusive grand deficit bargain. Now, he is saying that he's willing to raise revenue, but he's insisting that it comes from reforming the tax code to ensure, quote, fewer loopholes and lower rates for all. He also wants a down payment, which we don't know what that's going to mean exactly. He says, Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Americans. We want you to lead, not as a liberal or a conservative, but as the President of the United States. We want you to succeed. Let's challenge ourselves to find the common ground that has eluded us. Harry Reid, interestingly, is being quite tough is basically saying, don't push us around.
Yeah, and good on him for that. And he's also implying that he's willing to blow up the filibuster.
he is implying that, which he may in fact not need to do with the increased majority of the Democrats in the House. So,
well, they still
don't
have 60 votes.
Excuse me. Well, they also got an increased minority in the House, but the increased majority of the Democrats in the Senate. So we'll see.
Right. But they still don't have 60 votes in the Senate.
No, they don't have 60 votes in the Senate. They certainly don't. The Affordable Care Act obviously stands.
Obamacare.
Exactly. Now, a number of things have to happen. The health care law's requirement to purchase insurance and the insurance subsidies for millions of Americans all roll out on January the 1st, 2014. But some other things have to happen by November the 16th, which is states have to decide whether they're going to participate in the health insurance exchanges, the marketplace where individuals will shop for health insurance benefits.
Right.
And if they decide against it, the federal government takes over.
Right.
So they also have to decide whether they're going to participate in the Medicaid expansion and extend coverage to all residents under 103%, 133% of the federal poverty line. Again, they've only got until November the 16th to make that decision.
Now, we've got a bunch of Republican governors who've been playing chicken with this thing on the assumption that President Obama would not be reelected. Do you think that they're going to start backing down really quickly, or are they going to do political grandstanding here and go down as martyrs?
Well, I've got an interesting map in the Washington Post showing the gray states. There are a lot of gray states. You've got Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Virginia, Missouri, Iowa. You know, these are gray states that haven't made up their minds.
All
yet.
Republican governors.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. But many of them states that Obama won.
Yeah. Yeah. My prediction would be that these governors are going to have to go along with the law, and they're going to do it very quietly. Although there might be a couple of grandstanders who have, ambitions of higher office, the Bobby Jindals of the world, who think that maybe someday they'll run for the senator for the presidency, who will take a shot at it.
Yes. The Department of Justice today said the department's enforcement of the Controlled Substances Act remains unchanged. This because of ballot measures passed by Washington and Colorado states legalizing marijuana for recreational use. So your listeners in those states should listen to this quite carefully. The DOJ said in enacting the Controlled Substances Act, Congress determined that marijuana is a Schedule I controlled substance. We are reviewing the ballot initiatives and have no additional comment at this time.
Right. This is one of those areas where, just like, Obama eventually came out for gay marriage and it picked him up a large constituency, if he were to come out for, at the very least, medical marijuana, and then maybe a step beyond that, reclassifying marijuana as just a generic prescription drug, Schedule III drug, not even full decriminalization, I think he would pick up a generation. He would pick up a whole bunch of young people. But
I think you're probably right.
Yeah, and I think the Democrats would as well. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
And sign the petition to ask President Obama to free Don Siegelman, to pardon Don Siegelman, over at free-don.org. We'll be back with more post-election coverage.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Marcos Melitz has said some interesting thoughts on the election that I think are worth sharing. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you. Five of the last six presidential elections. Now, think of that. Five out of the six last presidential elections. Each presidential election is 4 years. So six times four is 24. Five out of the last 20 out of the last 24 years, Democrats won the majority of the popular vote. This should tell you something beyond that we need to get rid of the Electoral College. He goes on to point out that Barack Obama is the first Democrat to get reelected with an absolute majority of the popular vote since FDR. Very interesting. The Latino vote. In 2004, George W. Bush got 40% of it. In 2008, John McCain won 31% of it. And in 2012, yesterday, Mitt Romney won 21% of it. 40 to 31 to 21. I would call that a trend. So, anyhow, so it's some interesting observations. Marcos goes on through a whole, he says, he's projecting Democrats to pick up 7 seats in the House. We got rid of the crazies, Alan West and Joe Walsh. Deadbeat dad Joe Walsh, crazy man Alan West. This is an interesting, every single top elected official in the state of New Hampshire, where Louise and I lived for 5 years, a marvelous state. Every single top elected official in the state of New Hampshire is now a woman. I think this is, you know, a great thing for governance in that state, in the live free or die state. When we were there, Bill Loeb was still publishing op-eds on the home page, on the front page of his newspaper, with a black box around them going, argh, the rant. Bill is now dead. I'm not sure about Naki, his wife, who continued the tradition for a while, but basically New Hampshire has woken up. They still have, you know, people in the prisons making their license plates to say live free or die, which is terribly ironic. But beyond that. Minnesota, Marco says, was on fire last night. Democrats gained 11 seats, and this is statewide, inside the state. Basically flipped the House in Minnesota. And Puerto Rico. You know, Puerto Rico has been having votes as long as I can remember. I mean, since the 50s, about whether or not they should be a state. They actually voted. Now, this was a non-binding resolution, so, you know, it's kind of the sense of the island or of the nation or whatever you would call Puerto Rico, a commonwealth. They voted to become a state in the United States. I think that's neat. So anyhow, let's pick up some of your calls. Damien in Manorville, New York. Hey, Damien, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? I was listening to you earlier, and I was a little bit shocked how you were, you know, talking about, you know, we need progressives on the Supreme Court bench, not moderates, and you pointed to Ruth Bader Ginsburg as having this grand world view. Am I correct? Did I misquote you?
Well, she's made some decisions with which I disagree, others with which I agree. She is generally considered to be one of the more progressive members of the bench. That said, the Supreme Court is not even a centrist or institution to begin with. It's a very right-wing institution, by and large. What's your point?
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, she has made statements about that, you know, we need to take case law from international courts and bring that into the decision making of the Supreme Court. I mean, that is so out there. I mean, we're bound by the Constitution, not by the laws of other nations.
Yeah,
I mean,
and Ruth Bader Ginsburg never suggested that we were ruled by the constitutions or the rules of other nations. That comment you're taking wildly out of context. It was about how we live in an international community, particularly our laws. This, as I recall, this had to do with the Hamdan case, how our laws, where we're actually going into other countries, snatching people illegally. We were snatching people off the streets of Paris so that we could then take them to Bagram Air Force Base and torture them and then transport them to Guantanamo, that we need to consider the laws of France in this case, or of Afghanistan. That is not an unreasonable position, Damien. It's not at all unreasonable.
Well, maybe not. Hold on. Can I just say one thing then about the judges? I mean, like, look, I want your opinion on this, because it appears that whenever a prospective justice is going to be, you know, they're going through the hearings, the congressional hearings, like with Sotomayor. Sotomayor was drilled on the Second Amendment, and she kept talking about Heller. And she said over and over and over again how Heller is established law,
right,
and how she recognized that the Second Amendment was a was a law and it was precedent is precedent. She kept saying it over and over again. And Leahy kept saying that, you know, I'm a hunter and I'm for guns and she's not going to take away your right to bear arms. And then McDonald versus Chicago came across her, she dissented against the majority and she said that the city of Chicago can take away your Second Amendment rights. It is not a standard right for you to own a gun. I mean, so she lied, definitely lied to Congress that she understood that Second Amendment was established law that we had to protect it. She even
Heller does not say that the city of Chicago cannot have gun control.
No. Which in Chicago, in McDonald's.
Heller does not say that New York City cannot have gun control. If it did, there would be no gun control in New York City.
What she's saying, she said, I recognize how important gun rights are to many, many Americans. And then what did she do? The first case that came across her desk, okay, she tried to take away gun rights from.
She's not trying to take away gun rights. What she's trying to do is empower communities to protect themselves. You're creating this false dichotomy. We live in communities. We're not just all solitary people standing here all alone, all by ourselves. There are some communities, when I lived in Vermont, you could walk into any gun store, buy a gun, stick it in your pocket, walk out. You didn't even need a carry permit. And it's still that way as far as I know. Vermont's probably one of the least restrictive states in the union. And Bernie Sanders is their senator, and he supports that. On the other hand, you walk into New York City, and the vast majority of New Yorkers don't want people walking around with guns in their pockets. And so if you're going to do that, you've got to go through a fairly exhaustive licensing process. That is not inconsistent with Heller. And that is not inconsistent with what Ruth Bader Ginsburg was saying. And beyond that, what's your point?
The point is that we need to be extra careful that I don't care who it is, whatever they're going to be saying to the in the hearings, they're going to say what Lindsey Graham said, look, you're probably going to get in.
Well, let me give you a flip side of this, Damien. You got John Roberts and Sam Alito who came in and said, 1907. What's the damn law, Shano? What's it called? The Tillman Act. Isn't it the Tillman Act? No, I'm not sure. Anyhow, 1907, a law was passed that said, I'm pretty sure it's the Tillman Act, that said that it is against the law to give money to federal candidates. And this is established law. This is precedent. I mean, it's been built on over and over again. This is stare decisis. And what do they do with Citizens United? They blow up literally 100 years of established law. Is it the Tillman Act? My memory is still functional. Thank God. So, I don't disagree with you that you're going to have justices who in their confirmation hearings are going to punt, are going to ignore, are going to obfuscate. This is why you look at their history as well as you can. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that some of the more conservative justices have been people appointed by Democrats, and some of the more liberal justices, Earl Warren was appointed by a Republican, by Dwight Eisenhower. And boy, did Daddy Coke never let him forget that. I mean, he became the basis of the John Birch Society, impeach Earl Warren. But at least Obama's going to be making the nominations.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Can you imagine if Mitt Romney was made with Judge Bork advising him on the nominations?
Last minute in the spotlight, losing his election, trying to keep Ohio too, and he knows now that he can't do it. Oh no, he's spent too much and lied more than.
There you go. I saw a remark. I don't remember where I saw it. It was on one of the blogs or one of the comments someplace on, I don't know, might have been one of ours, where somebody said that the Republican consultants are rolling in money in ways that would embarrass Scrooge McDuck and his money bin. And that caused me to wonder if the reason why Karl Rove freaked out on TV last night is because he's still sitting on, 30, 40 million bucks that he hasn't been able to spend. He's been spending money in all kinds of obscure places like, hey, we got to get rid of this stuff as fast as we can that he'd collected from all these billionaires. And maybe he's still sitting on a whole bunch of millions of dollars and he's afraid they're going to come to him and say, we We'd like our money back, Carl. And that wouldn't be so comfortable, wouldn't it? Awkward, yes. Sue in Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania. Hey, Sue, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I've spoken to you before. I was previously a judge of elections.
Mm-hmm.
My husband died at Christmas, so I stayed out in the spring. But I volunteered again, and I started in a new district yesterday as a majority inspector.
Okay. So you were an inspector of elections yesterday in Pennsylvania.
A majority inspector. There's a majority inspector, a minority inspector, two clerks who check people in, and a judge of elections.
Now, what does majority and minority mean? Does that refer to which party's in power or to the relative status of the inspectors?
No, it has nothing to do with it. It has to do with duties.
Okay, so you're more of a big cheese inspector.
The tape has to be kept for a year, the information about the machine by the minority inspector.
Right.
We each have different duties.
Okay. All right. So you were the majority inspector. Okay. So what happened? What did you see? What did you learn?
Well, here's what happened. Now, understand, these women that I worked with were dedicated and did their best, except there was a problem. And there was two machines, and I watched this happen four times per voter on four occasions. If they voted straight Democratic, it went to straight Republican.
Hmm.
I could not get it off the machine.
You stood there and watched it happen on the machine.
Well, they called me over. You're not allowed to be there when they're voting. You're allowed to be.
No, I went through this. I went through this here in D.C. The machine, the ESNS machine I was voting on. When I got to the very end, it said that there was something wrong, and I had to go back, and I couldn't figure out what I'd done wrong. So I asked an election person to come over, and she stood next to me, and I walked through my screen. So she obviously saw what my vote was, and I didn't have a problem where it was bouncing. It was just giving me this kind of weird error message at the end.
I couldn't undo, so I called the judge of elections over.
Okay.
And she had already professed to me that she was a computer expert and that there was nothing that could happen, that these were non-networked and that this was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So she did something, and it took four or five times for the first voter in order for us to get it to hold on straight Democratic.
Wow.
The same machine had happened again a short while later. The voter called me, and I called her over, and again we did it. Now it happened with the second machine. We only had three machines.
Wow.
So it was happening on two different machines. So she somehow managed to get it to go right for those two, and then it stopped, okay, which is very suspicious, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I said to her, shouldn't we call Allegheny County, that's in Pittsburgh, and report it?
Right.
She said no.
Why?
She wouldn't do it, and she wouldn't let me do it. She wouldn't give me a reason. Well, these ladies were so angry with me for the rest of the day, and I never sat down from 5:30 yesterday morning until after the polls closed at 10 minutes after 8 last night.
Wow.
I actually walked out doubled over. I hadn't eaten all day. I only had two sips of water all day. I mean, we were busy.
Wow.
But anyhow,
You have been unable to report this problematic voting machine that when people tried to vote a Democratic straight ticket, it flipped it to Republican repeatedly. You've been unable to report this to anybody.
I went to vote at noon at my district, and I said to them, are you having any problems? And they said no. And I said, we're having this problem.
Right.
And I said, the judge of elections won't let me report it.
Right.
So I don't know if they reported it or not. Then outside, I actually ran into my stepson-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
I let him know. He said, Sue, you need to report it. I said, I can't. I said, would you please?
Right.
he said, I'm going to call KDK TV and have them come out.
Right.
Now, for the rest of the day, I made certain, I explained to every single voter, if you're going to vote straight party, make sure this is what you need to look for. Right. And I didn't say which party.
Right.
Interestingly, everyone who was Republican would say, oh, yeah, we heard that they were going to do this with the Republican. I say, well, actually, on our machines, it's only happening with the Democrat. Then the judge of elections came to me and said, you're spending too much time explaining things to voters.
Oh, my.
Well, I made sure every single voter had their vote count properly.
Yeah. Well, good on you, Sue. I would still encourage you to call 1-866-OUR-VOTE. I'm assuming that they're still answering the phones and taking calls on incidents today, and let them know what you experienced. And maybe call your Allegheny County Clerk of Elections or whoever the big cheese is there. Because this is a big deal, Sue, and somebody should identify that machine and figure out what's going on. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what was your experience yesterday? Where do you think we're going forward with this? And are you ready to help us all push this president and this Congress in a more progressive direction? It's the good, the bad, and the very, very muck of us ugly. The good. Residents of Troy, Michigan. The only town where I was flying out in a little airplane and nearly clipped a power line. Fortunately, I'm still here. I was the pilot. Voters in Troy, Michigan removed their mayor from office yesterday because of her blatant homophobic comments over the past few years. Shortly after New York passed marriage equality, former Troy Mayor Janice Daniels posted on her Facebook that she'd thrown out her I Love New York shirt now that, quote, queers can get married there, end quote. And earlier this year, she told high school students that homosexuality is a dangerous mental disease and compared it to the dangers of smoking. Daniels ouster, another victory for LGBT equality in our nation. The bad. The state of California. Among the flurry of ballot measures facing California voters yesterday was a measure to repeal the death penalty in that state. And unfortunately, California voters chose not to repeal it. The measure was defeated 53-47%. In the past year across America, multiple individuals have been put to death despite the fact that they never should have been given the death penalty in the first place. Innocent people. The death penalty should no longer have a place in the American criminal justice system. But with this vote in California, it looks like it's here for the time being, it's here to stay. And the very, very ugly, the Moraga School District. While Kristen Cunane was a middle schooler in the 1990s, she was repeatedly sexually abused and assaulted by two of her teachers. Now as an adult, Cunane is suing her former school district and seeking compensation for being raped for so many years. But the district isn't budging and has offered a surprising and appalling defense. The Moraga School District says Cunane was herself responsible for being sexually abused because she was careless and negligent in the manner of her, in matter of her own rape. So rather than admit that they employed teachers who were sexual abusers, the school district is blaming the victim, saying that she brought it all on. And that is very, very ugly. That's incredible. If you would like to know how NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming, works, and particularly how it can be used in the world of politics, I wrote a book about this called Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision. And we are going to give away a copy to somebody, presumably in the next 20 minutes, because that's how many minutes there are left in the show, to Shano's favorite caller, or the caller that tingles his leg. We'll see. Charles in Marshfield, Missouri. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
I guess congratulate you on your president.
Oh, my president? I thought he was our president.
Well, that's debatable.
So you're not a citizen of the United States?
I'm one of those crooked Republicans that's not been too proud of it sometimes. But anyway, I kind of resent your opinions and this, that, and the other. Being so one-sided you are, I can't imagine people being that way. And Well, anyway, you go back, I could quote some history to you back when LBJ was running. There was a book on him about semantics.
You're talking about the book titled, Texan Looks at Lyndon? I read that book.
Yeah, I believe it was.
Yeah, it accuses him of murder.
Then the Daily Boys, they'd even kind of set up and took notions on that.
Yeah.
And then I was watching the Discovery Channel here a couple of weeks ago, and it was this, the item was on alcohol, this here stuff, you know,
prohibition.
Constraints, caramel you talk about.
Yeah. So
and,
here, question, Charles, you know, I don't disagree with you that there are and have been corrupt Democrats and that there are corrupt Republicans. You said that you are a crooked Republican. What does that mean?
That's what you say.
Oh, I'm not calling you a crooked Republican.
I'm a Republican, so that automatically makes me one.
No, come on, that's nonsense. My dad was a Republican until the day he died, and he's one of the most honest and honorable men I've ever met in my life. He was a role model for me in my life.
Okay, well, let's see. Okay, well, you're for...
I think Dwight Eisenhower is one of the best presidents of the 20th century. He was a Republican. I play clips of Dwight Eisenhower constantly on this program.
You just said you're for marijuana and same-sex marriage?
I think that, yes, I will tell you that I think that criminalizing pot when we're not criminalizing alcohol is crazy. 50,000 people a year, 50,000 Americans a year die from alcohol, directly from alcohol, not from car accidents caused by alcohol, but from alcohol overdoses and liver damage caused by alcohol, 50,000. You know how many people have died from marijuana overdoses and from using a marijuana since 1920 when it was made illegal? You know how many? Zero. It's not toxic.
I see a doctor's report said it definitely affects your brain.
Well, it definitely does affect your brain. It's a psychoactive drug. Any drug you take is going to affect your brain. If you drink alcohol regularly, your brain is going to shrink over time. If you smoke pot regularly, you're going to get probably forgetful. That's the main side effect of people who regularly smoke pot. I'm not advocating anybody smoke pot. What I'm saying is if we're going to have a recreational drug in our culture, if we're going to say, hey, you know, somebody wants to alter their consciousness, they should have the right to. We use several right now. The three primary ones we use are tobacco, which kills 450 to 500,000 Americans a year, alcohol, which kills 50,000 Americans a year, and coffee or caffeine. And the numbers are out on that because there may actually be some benefits from using caffeine. But pot doesn't kill anybody, so I don't understand why it's not part of that collection. You know, the George Washington grew hemp on his farm. He kept track of it. He separated the male from the female plants, which is what you do when you're trying to separate out the stuff that can get you high from the stuff you can make into paper. The early versions of the Constitution were done on hemp paper. Pot was legal through the United States, in the United States up until the 19-teens when Henry Ford made a car that would run on diesel fuel. It was made out of hemp oil. One of the big paper companies was just going on a jihad about hemp being made into paper and being made into things for Henry Ford's cars. And so they got this thing banned. It was the alcohol lobby and the lumber lobby that got hemp banned, and they used the excuse of it being, you know, getting people high and mostly getting black people high. You know, the whole Reefer Madness movie, the black people smoke pot and they go out and rape white women. That was the story in the 1920s. It's nonsense. I think it's I agree with the libertarians and the far right Republicans like Rand Paul from Kentucky that Nixon's drug war is stupid and it's killing people. So, yeah, if you want to call me on that. And as to same sex marriage, if somebody is gay and they want to marry somebody who's gay, I think that marriage is a strong and powerful institution. This weekend is going to be Louise and I our 40th wedding anniversary, and I'm a fan of marriage, and I think that if gay people want to get married, they should be able to too. Now, you know, you can call me anything you want other than crooked over that, but I'm being honest with you. Your turn, Charles.
You don't need meat either.
Say what?
You don't eat meat either.
No, I haven't eaten meat since I was 16. I occasionally eat fish, but
okay. But
does that make me evil?
Back to the story I started to tell a while ago about Joe Kennedy.
Joe Kennedy was a crook. I used to be good friends with Gloria Swanson. She was on the board of directors of the Salem Children's Village up in New Hampshire. She's been a vegetarian, or had been. She's dead now, but had been a vegetarian since the late 20s. Joe Kennedy was her manager for a while, and according to her, anyway, took a whole bunch of her money. She detested the man. I can tell you stories about Joe Kennedy that would curl your hair. Just because, and in fact, Franklin Roosevelt, when he made Joe Kennedy the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission in 1935, when he created the Securities and Exchange Commission, made the comment that got widely repeated in the press that Joe Kennedy said to Gloria Swanson, he thought it was the most hilarious thing. Franklin Roosevelt said, "I'm going to put a crook in charge of the SEC because it takes a crook to catch a crook." So I don't get your point, Charles. Is your point that all politicians are bad, or just the Democratic politicians are bad?
Well, you say all Republicans are, so far as I'm concerned.
No, I'm not saying that.
And they're part of them.
What I'm saying is that the modern day Republican Party right now has very few people in it who have the kind of integrity that my father had, or that Dwight Eisenhower had, or if you set aside his criminal activities, that Richard Nixon had for that matter. That the modern day, or Bob Dole. Bob Dole was a decent and good Republican. The modern day Republican Party would have no place for Bob Dole. Richard Lugar was a good Republican. He got thrown out of office by this guy who thinks that God decides if you're raped whether or not you're going to get pregnant. It was Todd Akin, wasn't it? Or was it Moorcock? It was one or the other. It was Moorcock. Okay. In any case,
okay.
I would say that the problem, and I'm not saying this as like, you know, geez, I hate Republicans. I'm saying this as like the Republican Party's got a problem when they start running people for political office who say that if a woman is raped, that she can magically not be pregnant, or that pregnancy is not a medical condition that can be life-threatening to women. And if it is life-threatening to a woman, tough luck, have the baby and die. I think that when the Republican Party starts running those kind of people for political office, they've got a problem. It doesn't mean they're evil or criminal. It means that they're making stupid political decisions.
Okay. Got another one for you.
Okay.
There's an article in the paper about what caused this here mess we're in.
Right.
Do you know a James Johnson?
No, I don't.
It said James Johnson and other mostly Democrat caused this great recession.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of finger pointing going around. There are some people who are saying
he was the one that was Freddie Mac and
Fannie Mae
on this housing deal.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was the guy you may be describing was the one black guy who was working for Freddie Mac, as I recall. And I know Fox News loved to pick on him. But you want to know what happened? Go back and look up the end of Glass-Steagall and the role of Phil Graham, who's a Republican senator, in that. You'll see what really happened. Thanks, Charles.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We really need some serious healing in this country. I mean, it's just somebody who listens to the program and thinks that I hate all Republicans. I'm baffled.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day,
on the five splits.
From the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Okay, we were talking about decent Republicans. I want to just share with you a couple of clips from Dwight Eisenhower, if I may. This is Republican President of the United States, Dwight Eisenhower, in his farewell address to the nation in January of 1961, as he was handing the reins of government over to Jack Kennedy.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
Now, he went on to say, his speech was much longer than that. Here's a little more of it. This is brilliant stuff from the President of the United States.
As we peer into society's future, we, you and I, and our government, must avoid the impulse to live only for today, plundering for our own ease and convenience the precious resources of tomorrow. We cannot mortgage the material assets of our grandchildren without risking the loss also of their political and spiritual heritage. We want democracy to survive for all generations to come.
not to become the insolvent phantom of tomorrow.
This is Dwight Eisenhower talking about the cost of the military-industrial complex. He continues to talk about the spiritual cost of it.
During the long lane of the history yet to be written, America knows that this world of ours, ever growing smaller, must avoid becoming a community of dreadful fear and hate, and be instead a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. Together we must learn how to compose differences, not with arms, but with intellect and decent purpose.
Sounds like Obama. I mean, can you imagine if Obama said that? Republicans would attack him today. Here's his final comment, again, on the spiritual nature of the destruction of America through the military-industrial complex and how he prays for peace.
May we be ever unswerving in devotion to principle, confident but humble with power, diligent in pursuit of the nation's great goals. To all the peoples of the world, I once more give expression to America's prayerful and continuing aspiration.
We pray
that peoples of all faiths, all races, all nations may have their great human needs satisfied, that those now denied opportunity shall come to enjoy it to the full, that all who yearn for freedom may experience its spiritual blessings. Those who have freedom will understand also its heavy responsibility, that all who are insensitive to the needs of others will learn charity, and that the scourges of poverty, disease, and ignorance will be made disappear from the earth, and that in the goodness of time, all peoples will come to live together in a peace guaranteed by the binding force of mutual respect and love.
All peoples of the earth will come to live together in the binding force of peace, mutual respect, and love. Peace through mutual respect and love. Even Obama would not talk like that these days because he would be called a screaming, flaming, liberal, commie, pinko. Can you imagine? Shane says that was the Eisenhower apology tour. There you go. I mean, this is far more. This was a Republican president of the United States, a good and decent man. And this was a man who understood. Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of screw-ups during his administration. You know, they overthrew Mossadegh and put the Shah in 1953, for example. And I would be very interested. I'm not an Eisenhower historian. I don't know what role he played in that decision or if the CIA was just playing cowboy. But in any case, here was a man who had seen death on the battlefield. He'd led the invasion of Europe against Hitler. He saw thousands of men, tens of thousands of men. He may have seen hundreds of thousands of people die. He saw civilians die. He saw people die of starvation. He saw people die of disease, the dysentery epidemics that were sweeping Europe during World War II. The just death and destruction. And what did he do? He came back to the United States, and as president in 1954, you get the cross iron speech there? And as president in 1954, Dwight Eisenhower says, this, the cost of a heavy bomber, this is the world at war, the cost of a heavy bomber is this many schools or this many barrels of wheat or this many miles of highway. Just listen to this speech that he gave in the middle of his presidency in 1954, Dwight Eisenhower.
Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft.
A theft!
From those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this, a modern brick school in more than 30 cities. It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals. It is some 50 miles of concrete pavement. We pay for a single fighter plane with 500,000 bushels of wheat. We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people. This is, I repeat, the best way of life to be found on the road the world has been taking. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
So it's humanity hanging from a cross of iron. Where are the Republicans? Instead, they're telling us that if women get raped, there's nothing to worry about, right? I mean, where are the good Republicans? Anyhow, the election's finally over. Now the work begins. We'll have the latest tomorrow on what's going on with the president, the United States, conversation with progressive activist Tom Hayden. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. Now's the time to engage in media politics. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.